You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Hey everyone, this is Matt Willig, former NFLer and current actor. You are listening to the NFL Players Second Acts Podcast.
Welcome to the NFL Players Second Acts Podcast. I'm Peanut Tillman, and this is my deacon, as always, my guy, Roman Harper. Why are you smiling?
Because I just love your enthusiasm. Quite alarming, actually. You never...
You got to bring it.
No, I like
we
it.
We don't do the traditional and five, you. Four. I just go right into it. I'm
excited because this is a good version of Peanut today. So our guest is going to get a good show today. All right, before we get to our guest, though, I want to thank all of our listeners, our followers, that always tune in and pick us up. And remember, you can always listen to us wherever you get your podcasts at, whether it's Apple Podcasts or the iHeartRadio app. You know, who's our guest today?
We got a good one. He played 14 years in the NFL as an offensive lineman. He's got a Super Bowl ring with the Rams. He played in another Super Bowl with the Panthers. We both played for the Panthers. You've seen him on TV shows like The Young Rock and movies like We Were the Millers. Please welcome our guest, Matt Willig.
Yay! Guys, thank you, man.
And he is not only that, but he is the big man in Hollywood.
Like, literally.
He's not
literally.
A big man.
No. Literally.
He's the big man.
I'm one of them, at least.
It's like 6'9", 6'10".
Only on TV. Only
6'12".
On TV.
You're
guys,
huge.
Let me say, man, real quick, it's a privilege to be here. I've been listening to this show, and it rocks, and it's really an honor to be here. So thanks for having me.
Man, thank you. I didn't realize, I was telling you outside, you know, you don't realize who you see or who you know on TV.
Right,
and then all of a sudden, you start looking like, oh, dude, this guy, not only was a huge person, but he has the body of a football player, but he was a football player. And then, like I was telling you earlier, my wife has watched you in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
You know, I told you she was addicted to this movie, this show. And so it's been really cool to kind of like do a really big dive into your career and how your life and all the avenues it's taken you and what your acting career is like, what it's been like. Tell me one thing you're working on right now.
Well, first of all, let me just say it's my acting career sort of emulates my NFL career. You know, people didn't know I played for so long. People don't know I've been an actor for so long, but I kind of just go along and I kind of grind my way through. But I was an undrafted free agent, you know, was not supposed to make it in the NFL. Only reason I got in because I had a friend who was working at USC and who had some connections with the Jets. Mm-hmm. And they said, hey, this guy has nothing else to work hard for you. And that's sort of my deal. And that's how my career started.
Well, you also said you were a DN at first.
Yeah.
And then you switched over to offensive line. Yeah. You put on 30, 40 pounds.
That's a crazy story, too. I mean, you got a coach coming to me one day after, we're in 2-a-days.
Yeah.
I'm getting abused as
when
a 6-7.
When it was 2-a-days.
Oh, when it was
the old school.
What year
old
was this? 98?
Six weeks in a row. 6 weeks of 2-a-days. Oof. Brutal. Coach came to me one day and said, hey, we want to work out some drills with you. And 2 days later, I had the head coach say, hey, we're going to send you home. We're going to bring you back as an offensive lineman on the practice squad and see how it goes. 14 years, not bad.
That's awesome. All right. I want to talk to you about your closeness to winning a Super Bowl before you actually won the Super Bowl.
Okay.
All right. So, and we had to look this up a little bit. So in 1997, you played for the Falcons.
Yes.
And you actually lost to the Packers and they went to the Super Bowl.
Correct.
All right. Then the 1998, the following year, you're with the Packers and then they lost to the Falcons to go to Super Bowl when they're doing the shuffle.
We actually lost to the 49ers.
Oh, yeah, okay.
49ers end up playing the Falcons. Falcons end up going to the Super Bowl.
Yes. So, yeah. I was rooting against you because I was a 49ers fan.
Not too many people know that, so that's pretty right, good so by you guys.
We're connecting this whole, all the dots here. Then in 99, you actually won the Super Bowl.
Right.
So you were close all these years.
Yeah.
You finally win it. Then you're around a little bit, and all of a sudden you get there again with the Panthers in 2003.
Yeah.
I was in my college dorm, actually my college apartment at the time. We had a little bit more money than you guys did.
Yeah, I was actually in the league.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, young whatever.
Guy. Wait a minute. You're older than him?
Yes. Yes.
He paid me to say that. Don't worry about it.
Don't cry.
I was like, dude, I felt a little bit about that.
Hey, some of us color our hair. Some of us don't. Don't worry about it. It's
you're
okay.
Right. Correct. But so talk about that. The experience of being that close, always sniffing the Super Bowl, finally getting there, and then all of a sudden winning it, and then getting there again, and maybe, and then losing it.
Yeah. You know, listen, as you guys know, man, just being in the league is a privilege sometimes. And mm-hmm. you know, how hard guys work and don't get there, don't work.
So true.
Right.
And so, you know, my main focus was just staying in the league, staying active. But yeah, there were some times where I'm like, man, this is my sort of curse, you know, in the league. I'm going to stay in the league, but I'm always going to be that, you know, that also kind of just getting close, but never getting there. So it was rough. It was especially the one where I was with the Packers and they had been to a couple bowls in a row.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and then I thought, okay, I'm making this nice jump here where I'm going to get on a team that's going to be back. And then we lose. And then the Falcons, you know, who we saw a building kind of progress going on, but, you know, I didn't think they were going to get there that fast. And then the Dirty Birds freaking go all the way.
Came out of nowhere.
Yeah. But listen, man, it's win or lose, you know, to me, the Super Bowl wasn't the ultimate. I was just worried about kind of making sure that I was part of the team and contributing, things like that, man. I didn't really have those Super Bowl aspirations. It was really just about kind of, I'll be honest, you know, making money for me and my family and, mm-hmm. and kind of keeping that thing going. Because, again, every year as a free agent, I had to prove myself over and over again. You know, my first 5 years in the league, I had five different head coaches. So when you're that free agent guy, there's one coach that kind of loves you and kind of pulls on you and say, yeah, you're my guy. And then he's out of there. And next thing you know, you got another coach who doesn't know you. He don't know you. And he wants the first rounder. He wants the guy who's, you know, who's touted. So that was kind of my thing. So, you know, I was just trying to stay afloat.
I got to be honest, though. I've never heard anybody say that played in the NFL that the Super Bowl was never like
the ultimate. Yeah, that's the first. Yeah. That's why I was like, really?
It's
like,
I've never heard anybody say that.
That's what makes me stupid.
Or unique.
Or unique.
I like that way. Yeah, let's
I'm the kind of guy
unique.
That can go and choose the NFL career and then choose an acting career after that.
So how proud are you let's you went to USC.
Yeah.
You know, a very franchised organization, college.
Prominent.
A great school. You go there, good career. And then you go undrafted, 14 years in the NFL, playing a different position than what you didn't play. So tell us, how proud are you just from having that long of a career without being drafted? That's, like your work ethic, everything.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. That's kind of where my pride comes from. That's the most for me, you know. Like I said, I wasn't supposed to make it. You know, I played with guys like Junior Seau, Mark Carrier, you know, guys that played a long time and were touted from day one. You know, I go back and meet with my guys from SC and they still can't believe it all these years later, like that I was the guy.
Yeah, you were the one.
I was the guy who went that long. But that was kind of where the pride was. You know, for me, I got a couple of, you know, inner mantras that I kind of go through. And one of them is just, why not me? You know, why can't I be that guy? You know, whether it's, like I said, the acting or the NFL. But yeah, that was a huge source of pride that I was able to kind of put myself in a place where, especially after year 6, 7, 8, I was known as a guy who could come in, learn the system right away, be a smart enough guy to kind of play a couple different positions and be valuable to a team, whether it was starting or not. You know, I started only so many games, under 100, but I probably doubled that in games I played three quarters or more. because I could come in and back up like that. And so
I think your starts were like 46 or 48.
Hey, man, I said I was closer to 100. What the hell? No, you're right. Okay, whatever.
Shot him down. But he played in like 160 or 170 something. So it's
I doubled that in probably games that I played at least a half or more, you know. So when you think of it that way, I was valuable in much more ways than just being that starter guy. And so, yeah, that was a huge source of pride for me that I was able to do it and do it well for a long time.
Talking about pride, and this is kind of off the subject and going back a little bit. I read that, you know, you were standing by Dick Vermeil when London Fletcher tackles Kevin Dyson.
Yes.
Right. Boom. You win the game. Emotional. Everybody's happy. You're celebrating. And then you're in Carolina. I'd like to know maybe where were you standing when all of a sudden Tom Brady drives him all the way down. And now looking back on it, Tom Brady, when he did that then, was not Tom Brady that we know and sit here. And I'm looking at right here today. Does it give you any type of emotion knowing that Tom Brady has become who he's become? And like, maybe you're like, you know what? We were just in the way and we had no idea.
Well, it was the beginning of his legacy, you know? It really was. And that was a heartbreaking loss, man. Because I tell you what, you know, as you guys know, the further you get and when you have those kind of teams that get to the Super Bowl and teams that do well, no matter what, you have this camaraderie and this sort of closeness with the team that you reach. And that year came out of nowhere. First game, Rodney Peete gets hurt, who's our starter. Jake DeLome comes in. Sort of the same feeling with the Rams, you know, where Kurt Warner came in.
Yeah.
So the expectations were low, and to have those kind of seasons were so high that but I remember I was actually on the field goal block team.
Okay.
When their kicker
Vinatieri,
thank you.
He was there 30 years.
He kicked the winning kick. There's a picture of me putting my hand up with the ball going right over it as he's kicking the winning field goal. So, you know, heartbreak is the word that I think of. But again, yeah, to look back on it and say, boy, that was really the beginning of the staple of that legacy of Tom Brady, man, of the GOAT. So it's pretty nuts.
So I got 13. You got
11.
11, 14. Yeah. I know for me, my body started to, shut down. I tore my ACL my last year.
Right.
So at that point in time, I knew it was time to retire. What point in your career did you know it was time to walk away from the game?
I had some knee injuries that were not major, but they were adding up. You know, I was bone on bone on both of them and things where I just couldn't, you know, as an old lineman, if you can't bend your knees and get low, especially when you're 6'8".
Yeah. Makes it a little
problem.
Difficult.
There's a problem. So I think it was sort of the last year when I was spending so much time in the training room, and you guys know how that goes, you know, at the end, you're just spending so much effort just trying to get out to practice sometimes. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but even, you know, year 15, I was thinking, man, I hope someone calls, you know.
Right. Yeah.
I wasn't sure what my status would be. But I would say right around year 12, I was kind of out of doing nothing, just doing a simple little drill, sort of blew my meniscus and tore it, you know. And so that was when I kind of started to really kind of wonder how many more years I got left. But
and you still squeaked out another two.
And I still squeaked out another two. And I'm feeling it. And I'm feeling it today.
You don't look like it. You walked in great. You're looking good. If you ever cross your leg, a lot of people can't do that.
Can't even do that.
A lot of people can't do that.
I know. Well, flexibility was a big thing for me too.
Clearly. So tell me this though. You were doing some TV and early, you know, interviewing and or like analyst work when you were playing.
Yeah. I started out, I hate to interrupt you, but
No, it's fine. I just want to know, was that always part of the plan? Did you know you were going to be doing
it? It was not.
Because it led you to acting eventually. It did, yeah. But
I'll start with when I ended my career, I was thinking, you know, football analyst, football guy, or let's try the acting. But before that even started, I was hosting radio and TV shows. You know, we all know we get those. Back then it was radio, you know, you do radio shows like with the linemen kind of thing, Matt Willig with the, you know, with the old line kind of stuff. And I started doing that, then started hosting and being part of the 49ers weekly stuff, you know, things like that, where I just got comfortable being in front of the camera and had a little bit of a personality.
You do have a good personality. Have a good personality.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate
you
that.
You do.
Man. But that's how it started. And then had a friend who had an agent in the business who dealt with a lot of ex-athletes. And so right around year, in fact, it was just after we had won the Super Bowl with the Rams, I ended up doing a commercial. I got into the acting thing and I booked my first commercial.
What was the commercial?
It was a commercial with Terrell Davis and Kurt Warner for Campbell's Soup.
Campbell's Soup.
Okay. And I played, you know, I played an offensive lineman for the Rams.
Easy.
It was an easy deal.
Easiest gig ever.
But so I was doing that, you know, my last 3 or 4 years in the NFL, I was doing it every offseason. I'd go and I'd do 3 or 4 commercials, you know, and started having instant success. And so that's when I kind of thought, you know, let's give this a shot and see what happens. So that's kind of how it started.
Oh, okay. Did you get any free soup after the commercial?
No.
They didn't
no, get any. I tried. By the way, you don't want to try that soup after about 7 hours of it sitting around.
But, that's the best thing about it, man. I'd have got all the free soup I wanted. So was it hard getting into the acting bug? Like, what made you want to get into acting itself, though?
Like, I know we do radio, we do TV. That's kind of the typical thing for us to do when we retire.
And commercial, and playing an offensive lineman, that's not really
that's
acting.
Different. Yeah, that's different.
Yeah. Like, I'm curious, like, how did you get into, like, that? What was that first big role like for you to get into character, makeup, crying, not crying, emotional?
I'm the fifth of six boys, and I was always looking for attention. That's kind of where it starts.
Okay.
You know, when you're this big, you take on that personality of kind of being the jokester guy. And I was that guy. I was that guy in the NFL. I was the guy who kept things loose, kind of always had that sort of goofy personality. And that's kind of how it started. I got with an acting coach and worked for first couple of years just to see where I was at.
Yeah.
And Stuart Robinson, I'll never forget him. He dealt with a lot of ex-athletes. And he told me right away, he's like, man, he goes, you've got something. You got it. You have a kind of a fearless attitude about things where you have these instincts. And a lot of times instincts will carry you for a while. You know what I mean? If you just kind of think you know what you're talking about, you can fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
And I did that for a while. I'm telling you. And I was lucky enough to have some good roles and get some good things where they fit. Now, again, being my height, man, there's only certain roles that you're good for.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to play the leading guy. So it was a lot of bad guys. It was a lot of things that to me seemed easy. You know, it's only when you get into the heavy dialogue and things like that where you got to really show emotion where you decide whether or not, you know, you got what it takes. And again, it's little steps, man. As you know, you take these little steps, climbing that ladder to figure out how far you can go. And so I was doing that and it was working for me.
So by you being so high at a man of your stature, being 6'8", 6'9", and you can only play so many roles, is that a little discouraging? Being, was it called typecasting?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be the bad guy all the time. I want to be the lover, not the fighter.
Specifically the bad guy for sure. You know, I like playing guys who are a little different and have some emotion. And that was cool to kind of get to a place where I was playing some of those guys. But it takes time, you know. Hollywood loves to typecast you. It's been said for years and years and years. And it's true because they like you the way you fit, you know. And it's only when you do, I was able to do a couple of independent things, you know, things that were lower budget where you can kind of get out and do your own thing, where you kind of, you put that on a reel, you know, you show other people, things like that, where they finally start to go, okay, he's got some chops. It's been, one of the coolest things about acting has been some of the little responses from people that I admire or respect who have said, you know, Matt's got some chops, Matt's got some acting ability. And for a guy who kind of came up the way I did, just being an act, a ball player, that means a lot to me too.
So I've done one movie in my entire life, and I did the Sharknado. May the Fourth be with you.
Oh man, I wish you hadn't told me that. Respect level just bounced, man.
I saw it.
Yeah,
I had like one line, and I have no desire to be an actor whatsoever, but the dude reached out and I was like, well, yeah, whatever,
absolutely,
I'll do it. Didn't read the script till I got there. Like, I totally was not prepared.
Right.
Wish I had an acting coach or whatever, but anyway, I guess my question is, what does an acting coach do? Like, what could an acting coach teach you? Like, what do you do? I know football drills, I do certain drills to get me my feet right, hand drill, whatever. Like, what do you do as an acting coach?
I'll give you a great example. Early on, because I'm sort of a handsy guy who likes to kind of talk like this sometimes. I was doing that as an actor. And he would say, plant your feet and stop moving. Be still. And that was one of the earliest lessons I learned, was to be still where you are. And you don't realize how much you kind of move around and do things, especially if I'm, you know, you're someone like me who did, until you kind of realize what you're doing and stop doing it or start doing something like that, then, you know, that's one of the, some of the real keys. It's the minimalization of things that you do, you know, just eye movement, mm-hmm. as opposed to shaking your head and making a face or things like that, that really make the difference between kind of being a guy who does it sometimes or a guy who can kind of elevate himself into that next level of acting, which again, man, if there's 80 levels of acting ability, I'm on, you know, the top, I'm on the first 10, you know, I got so much further to go. But again, those are some of the things that you do. It's amazing to be able to see yourself just like when we're balling, you know, you think you're doing something, mm-hmm. right. And then you watch tape or film and you go, I didn't realize I did that.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of takes film sometimes to be able to see what you're doing wrong.
Right.
It's the same with acting. You know, you're able to see the little things that you can kind of change moving forward. And again, like I said, early on, man, being still and being kind of planted where you are, it was a huge thing.
So, I mean, that's got to be huge for you, you know, especially with your stature, right?
Yeah. Like,
you can already be a little bit overbearing compared to probably your co-actors.
Yeah.
Besides you, you're going to be way bigger. We don't need you flailing arms, right? It takes away from what you're actually saying. Is that where they were trying to give you that? That's one of the biggest advices for you, I'm sure. And somebody may tell me something completely different, but we all have to accept it. I really love that part of it. The other part, what I really want to know is, what's the difference between like a low budget, like
independent
film,
like a high budget project?
Like, be able to tell the average person, 'cause I've never been on a set. Like, break that down for me. Like, what are the biggest differences? Because, like, I think I know, but yeah. I don't know at all. So well, tell me that.
I gotta say all these things with and being delicate. I don't want to offend anybody out there.
Well, they don't know.
Yeah, right.
Is it Tubi? Is it like Tubi low budget?
It's here's what it is. Number one, it's obviously money.
Yes.
Money that they invest in actors, that they invest in sets, that they invest in the ability to shoot somewhere. A lot of times just, you know, being able to pay for a spot to shoot is important, you know? So all those things, it's across the board. I would say number one, the level of acting is, you know, the actor that you're going to get on a higher budget, obviously is something. But again, sometimes when you get with the right crew, I did a movie called The Employer, with Malcolm McDowell and a cast of about four or five people, where very low budget, but you knew right away coming in, these are high level actors that are just kind of doing, you know, and I'll say another thing is script.
They like the script.
Well, when you get a good script that you know it's going to be something, a lot of times when you get in those lower budgets, the script is a little suspect and lacks a little bit, you know, but a lot of times you have the ability to play with that script a little bit, you know, to make things right, or you can see the writing's not good and things like that. It's like I said, it's hard to answer because, like I said, across the board, it's just always a little bit lower,
okay,
the lower level of everything.
So I know a couple, like, I don't know how far, a few years back, though, you were at a gym. Was it Equinox Gym?
Mm-hmm.
And you're working out, and you happen to run into The Rock, and you guys have this brief moment conversation, and you asked him for some advice because you were trying to get into the acting.
Yeah.
What was that advice, and how has that helped you with your career thus far?
It was interesting because it was very specific. I didn't, being fully aware of not overstepping your bounds with someone like that,
right,
you know, is kind of important. So we were working out for a couple of weeks and we'd just do some sets together, nothing big. And I had a movie coming out called Year One, which was kind of my first big movie that I had done.
Michael Cera,
Jack Black. And there were some instances, I wasn't invited to the New York premiere. And so it was very specific about, hey, man, what do you think? What angle should I take in sort of putting myself in there, you know, and forcing myself in there? And looking back on it now, Dwayne was the perfect guy because Dwayne has forced himself into a lot of things, you know, to make himself, you know, one of the greatest that we have today. And he was very honest about things and kind of gave me that sort of advice that was, you know, push your way through, man. Don't say no. Don't let no be an answer. Don't let them tell you you can't go somewhere, like things like that. And so that was cool. You know, it was cool just to have that and kind of keep it light and simple. And he was very cool about it. And he ended up kind of very soon after that, kind of getting his own gym and, you know, kind of going private. And I'd see him from time to time where he would come up and give me some love and say, yeah, and one day, man, we'll work together one day. And to kind of come full circle and have it be with Young Rock and have it be his story. And play a guy that he considered basically his uncle. You know, he used to call him Uncle Andre as a kid. So that's kind of was kind of a neat little full circle moment.
So I just want to briefly talk about your role in Young Rock when you when you play Andre the Giant. For those listening and watching, Andre the Giant was about Was he seven feet tall? He weighed about 450 pounds. He was, I mean,
it's just funny to me because every wrestler, they get taller every time they announce their name.
That's right. He was, and he was one of them.
He was huge. Yeah. I remember watching him as a kid, and I remember when Hulk Hogan picked him
just
up.
Body slam. Just a normal body slam. I lost my everlasting mind
at like 6 years old. And that moment right there, Hulk Hogan, I was like, yo, he is the truth. He is the deal. Now, you don't look like you 450 pounds.
No.
What all did you have to do? What did your body have to do to become that player? And I like the hair, too. You had like the little curls.
Yes. My wigs were the best. It wasn't even my hair. That's the transformation I needed to make. You know, when I booked it, it was funny because they never even said to me, hey, we want you to gain weight or we want you to kind of get into that sort of mode that would look like Andre. They booked me at, you know, basically kind of what I weigh now, maybe even a little less. I'm about 300, I'm like 295. And I was probably a little bit less, but I took it upon myself to gain 30 pounds for the first year. And, you know, it was just about being soft and having that Andre look. After that, it was, you know, it's facial mannerisms. It's things like that that you got to really look at. I studied everything that he did. And then once you put that wig and the different outfits on, it sort of transforms you. But yeah, the weight was the biggest thing because I really wanted to feel that. And, you know, when you're on camera, everything adds. And so being 330 pounds, 6'8", it transforms into 7'450", you know, really.
Yeah.
It was a grueling grind to kind of keep that weight on where everybody else was, all the other wrestlers were losing weight and trying to look as good as they could. You know, getting in the abs going, I was like, hey, let's go and have some lunch. You know, let's go eat another burger. And so that was kind of funny. But I took it really seriously, you know, because I didn't want to. This guy is iconic.
Andre is iconic.
Even if you don't know wrestling, you know Princess Bride, the movie he did. And so there was a great responsibility, honestly, to kind of do it right, kind of have a lot of respect for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though it's a show where they're going to dramatize things and kind of make some stuff up and to make it a show, it was really important kind of for me to make it believable, respectful, you know, and make it so that people who knew Andre back in the day, that was one of the biggest things that I had since Sources of Pride, you know, as the show was going on, was people were coming to me who knew Andre and saying, man, kind of uncanny, you know, some of the things that you're doing remind me of Andre. And so a lot of respect for that. So
I got one question for you before we move on to the next one is, all right, so when you're saying you're watching film on Andre the Giant, like how much film do you watch? I know when we say watch film, we watch like football.
Right.
But like how much film do you really watch?
I watched every interview Andre did at least 20, 25 times.
Mm.
And there wasn't that many. There were different points in his life where he spoke less good English.
Yeah, right.
You know, then he started to learn a little more. Then he became heavier, even heavier when he was older. And he kind of had the you and the more. My biggest thing was I would.
Oh, you almost did it.
The tongue.
Give the people what they want.
You deaden the tongue. You know, you make the tongue as big as you can so that you talk with everything is kind of. So that's kind of where I started that. That was kind of where it started. And then again, just to kind of make a point, when I was when I came in and I had so much confidence going back to that,
yeah,
that I could do it. I was almost, and I don't want to be disrespectful to the executive producers, but they let me do some things. You know, they said, hey, we trust you enough to where if you want to make these choices or these things, you know, sometimes I would say, hey, Andre wouldn't wear this, you know, or Andre wouldn't have done this. The first season, you go back to that WrestleMania 3 incident with Hulk Hogan. They wanted me to wear that black singlet, which he's very famous for, but he never wore it early on. He only wore it kind of at a certain point in his career. They wanted me to wear it the first season, and I kind of said, hey, Andre wouldn't have worn this. It was before the time. And they respected me enough to say, okay, we get it. You know, and they would change it up. Little things like that, that kind of along the way allowed me to kind of have some real good say over the character, which was really cool.
And you wouldn't know that unless you watched and studied the film. Yeah. That's so important. Yeah. Great job right there.
Put in the
work. My other thing is, how does that make you feel? Do you feel like closer to The Rock? Because it's really like a part of his story, a part of his life. Do you feel closer in that way, knowing that he was kind of that person that kind of gave you confidence in this lane, right? Yeah. Like, because we all got to have somebody believe in us or tell us at some point, man, like, you can do this. It's okay to believe that it's okay. And how does that maybe emotionally take you in a place, or have you ever just wrapped your head around all of that?
You know, I have, and it's a trip, because I look back on even the first day that I auditioned for Andre the Giant for it, and knowing that it was Dwayne's story, and knowing that it was, you know, that he was going to be looking at that and seeing my audition and stuff. And there was a sense of kind of calmness about it. There was a sense of, he knows me, he's going to know more about me.
Yeah.
And I kind of had that little confidence about, yeah, let's do this. I ended up talking to the executive producer, the showrunner of the show, Nanochka Khan, and she was there for my audition. And she told me later on, you know, when I walked in with this confidence, they almost knew instantly that I was, now, don't get me wrong, I needed to fit the bill physically.
Right. That's probably the first box.
And I came in speaking French, which threw them for a loop. They actually asked me if I knew French fluently. But yeah, there was no, I used that sort of that, you know, looking back on that same feeling that he gave me, I used that on my audition and knew instantly. And sure enough, they told me later on that they knew right away that I was going to be their Andre.
Number one, French is a beautiful language. How do you know French? You can't just drop that.
Yeah.
Just like,
I don't know.
You can't just drop that.
I don't know French. I was able to learn a couple of lines in the dialogue that they had and speak it in a way. That's another thing that I sort of have the ability to do is I have the ability to give accents. I can learn them pretty quickly, and I've been able to play some characters, Russian or kind of an Eastern European, or in this case, having a French accent. And don't get me wrong, I got with a French dialect coach, and she helped me later on.
Yeah, of course.
I was able to fake it just enough in that audition and do it well, to where they was like, damn, you can speak French too? I'm like, I will. I will when I need to, you know. So yeah.
Do you think you mimic how you hear it? Because Trevor Noah, he's real big into traveling and learning other languages.
Right.
And he goes, the biggest difference with learning languages, why it's easier for kids to learn language, because kids, they don't mind making a fool of themselves because they can just mimic it. So right. I'm not saying I'm an expert at mimicking people, but when I imitate or if I'm telling a joke or whatever, I kind of mimic what I hear.
Yeah.
So do you think that's kind of what...
That's where it starts. And with every language that you try to mimic or have an accent with, there's always four or five key things or key words that you'll hear from either someone with a French accent or someone with an Irish accent or someone with an Eastern European accent that you recognize, you know, that you can go, okay, that sounds legit, because those are words they would change or not be able to change. You know, they wouldn't use certain vowels, stuff like that, you know, as trivial as it sounds, those are the things that kind of are important. And again, going back to having the skills as a next level actor, those are the things you kind of do.
I'm making all the connections here, because you were like a young kid. You said, like, making fun of myself. This is kind of like being the big guy and just trying to make it easy on everybody. Peanut's like, no, that's how you actually learn how to make and actually sound like other languages as well. That's just, you know, you're putting all these things together.
You gotta put yourself out there.
You gotta be able to put yourself out there.
Look, you can look at every comedian and they have the ability to do that.
Yeah.
And speak in 17 different, you know, sort of characters or whatever. It's that same mentality. It's right. That same kind of, again, I said I was the fifth of six boys. You know, you're always looking for attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's those kind of things that I've always sort of used and had at my disposal to kind of, you know, use to lighten situations or whatever, you know, kind of make myself in a relationship with somebody.
We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up, picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all, but here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay, so you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs.
Yeah, like check out these hair plugs. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, like John Cena got it. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't. Mm-hmm. You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but.
All right, so what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
But let's say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I want to ask you about what it was like when you were playing the role in the movie Concussion. It was it was a very deep dive, and I was actually nervous as a football player to watch the movie. I just tried to stay away from it. I still have not watched it because I just kind of stayed away from it because I was always so nervous. Like, is it going to be insight into my own life?
Right.
I should probably be okay to do it now because I've been retired for 6 years and
yeah.
I work on TV. I don't have any injuries mentally or brain injuries that I know of. So, but enough about me, but back to you, were you ever emotionally drained? How did this movie affect you internally, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, playing the role that you had to play? And also maybe talk about the preparation going into it.
Sure. Yeah, I know all those things, man. Again, talking about taking a role seriously and really kind of having a connection with it. So I played Justin Strelzik, who was a former NFL lineman who ended up taking his life, many believe, because of CTE. I met with his widow. That was the first thing I wanted to do. And even before that, got in touch with her where she sent me a box full of his drawings, his writings, his music. He was a real eclectic guy where he played the guitar and kind of he wrote, he wanted to be an actor, honestly. And so there was all these things that where he would write. And so she sent me a whole bunch of stuff. So getting into that part of it was really huge, kind of getting into a mindset of that downward spiral that one would go through. Because like you, I'm lucky enough, and I think it's part of why we do this. I think keeping the brain active and motivated is a huge factor. So that was and then when I got out to Pittsburgh, we shot in Pittsburgh, met with the widow and his family. It's funny because they have a son named Justin who was born on the same day I was born. Mm. They ended up, I said I was going to ride a motorcycle, which he rode. I said, is there any way to get his motorcycle? His son had his motorcycle that he rode. And so I learned how to ride because I'd ridden, but he had a big hog, he had a big Harley. And so I needed some practice anyways. learned how to do that. It was all these little things that I'm telling you, like just like I'm talking about before, the little things that kind of make and put yourself into a position where you're ready to rock when it comes time. My scenes were emotional. The actress that played his widow or his wife at the time, we cried for 10 hours doing a scene. Just to stay in that moment, that place where, you know, there's a scene where I get violent and end up leaving. I remember distinctly between scenes us holding hands, just two actors who had just met a couple days ago, holding hands, trying to hold back tears because of this, of the seriousness, severity, the climactic sort of heat that was going on scene. I ended up choking her in a scene, which it wasn't in the script, which scared the hell out of her, scared me because the director wanted me to do it. So again, going back, kind of cutting through, it was those things kind of that put me in that space to kind of maybe feel what he might've been feeling. But the whole concept of CTE and things like that, kind of, again, you walk in with this idea that I need to kind of take this serious as, because I'm part of it.
Yeah.
I could be living this.
Yeah. Right, right.
Who knows, you know? Yeah. I've known guys. I played with Junior Seau. I roomed with Junior Seau. Another linebacker, Scott Ross, who was a big-time player at SC my times, he ended up taking his life, and they found CTE. So I've been around it. I've seen it. And so, yeah, man, it was a heavy deal. And I had so much, again, going back to even like with Andre, I had so much pride kind of getting involved in it and being a part of it. And so it was pretty cool.
All right, tell me this, though. One last thing to finish that up. How do you get back out of playing such a serious role where you've been involved with the family, you've met with the widow, you ride the bike, you see all these things so intimately, like you're saying, you're holding hands crying.
Yeah.
Such a serious moment of it. How do you get back out of that? I'm like, okay, I'll get
drugs
back.
And alcohol?
Yeah.
Can I say that?
I mean, if it helps, I mean, I appreciate the honesty.
Again, I think to me, going back to CT real quick, I think that part of the issue with a lot of guys, and this is just my opinion only, is that they have pre-existing conditions.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of them have these dual personalities. Their ups and their downs are really high, so that kind of comes with the territory. I've always been one who has always sort of looked at things from the comical side of things. So I kind of, that for me is a great way to pull back,
right.
is to have some comedy with things and kind of keep things light. Yeah. And again, I was there for maybe a couple of weeks while I was shooting, and then sort of taking yourself out of that situation. I had a huge beard that was Justin's, you know, that I grew, shaved that off. You know, you just change the whole personas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's all sorts of things like that that I would do that would put me back into the Matt Willig mode, you know, or you go home and slapping some kids around. You know, I'm joking, of course, but being a parent, you know, will take you out of that, and all sorts of things like that to kind of put you back where you need to be.
Okay, good.
So we're going to flip it. We're going to get into a couple of fun questions now. Me,
cool.
I'm a big movie guy. I love movies, seen a ton of movies. I probably go to a movie by myself. I go all the time.
I'm the same guy.
So We're the Millers.
Yes.
Hilarious. I probably watched it a month ago. And just by chance now,
right,
we meet you and we're doing this show. There's a...
remember, his daughter's in here.
No, she's...
This is a very good... You could watch this. Your kids could watch this.
I've seen the movie. I know exactly where you're going with this.
Okay.
I know who he played.
So there's a strip tease scene in that part when you guys are in that warehouse or whatever and they get called, the cartel and all that. So was she supposed to strip tease with you, or did they cut that out?
I've sort
20
of
minutes before shooting the scene is what I was told. 20 minutes of what I've read, 20 minutes before the scene, Jennifer Aniston canceled.
Well
she I don't know if she canceled.
She didn't cancel. What happened was in the script, it's that she comes over to my character and dances all over me. And that was my first day of shooting. So I'm there in the scene. So it was kind of, it was easy, but... yeah, that was a funny little moment of going, man, I almost had Jennifer Aniston give me a lap dance. I guess
on
not.
Day one.
On day
on
one.
Day, on day one.
One.
On day one. I could have done anything and got fired. I would have been happy.
Oh.
That was a fun, by the way, that was a fun movie to shoot.
It was a fun movie to watch.
Yeah.
It's got
I love
great
the edits.
It. It's the edits.
Oh my
At
god!
The end.
The edits are hilarious.
Mark, it's funny because when people see that, that's like people that have known me forever kind of go, "That's the Matt Willig I know." You know, the guy kind of tickling somebody at the end there. It was a lot of fun.
What's been your favorite role that you've ever done?
Wow. Been in over 60 films.
Yeah,
that's a lot. You've been busy.
I would say Andre, just for the sheer fact that it was really close to my heart, kind of doing that and kind of do it well and get some acclaim for it was pretty cool.
Now, were you a wrestling fan growing up? Did you ever watch?
Funny thing was, I wasn't a huge wrestler. I know.
Six boys.
We would wrestle.
Come on, as big as you are, like there's not the wrestling.
No
guy.
Power driving in the house.
No, never. Had never been to a show. Didn't know any of that. You know, I knew characters and things, but I was never a huge fan.
Your brother never put you in the Boston Crab.
No, he would just slap. And I was playing one of maybe 10 other guys in the shot, but he took the time to kind of give me some one-on-one, and that he did not disappoint, man. He was as cool as I thought he was. And so that was a big one.
All right. And now I got to go off script now.
All right.
Because you just said something that now I have to know. Okay. Right? You're talking about filming in Asia. All right. Where is the coolest place you've ever filmed?
Well, the funny thing, we shot that here in the States, but it only showed over. Like, you know, a lot of times,
yeah,
these big time actors will get paid a ton of money to kind of do this. I think it was for like a petroleum company or a gas company. It was just something random, but they get paid a ton of money to shoot these commercials that will never be shown in the States. Where's the coolest place I've shot? Where have I been? God, Lord. I would say year one. This is another weird answer. Year one, we shot in a place called White Sands, New Mexico.
Oh, yeah. I've been there. I've driven through there before.
Yeah. It was a trip. You're talking about literally white sands for miles. I remember because I'm a golfer. I ended up pulling out golf clubs. I'm dressed like a caveman, and I'm pulling out golf clubs and hitting balls like as far as I can. Yeah. So that was one of the cool places.
We would be best friends because I'm a golfer too.
That's all he's been talking about all day. Right. Just trying to golf.
I just played Torrey Pines the other day for the first time in about 15 years.
And how'd you shoot?
Had a blast. Shot in the 80s. Both in relationship wise, you know, my parents, they were the type of parents that never really showed, they didn't fight in front of us, which to me was a cool thing. I knew they would be mad at each other. I knew they had arguments and fights. They just took the time to kind of go, hey, we're not going to put this out there for our kids. For me, that was cool. The grind, they showed me how to grind. My dad was a cop and worked a couple of jobs outside of that to raise six boys. He was mean and angry as a kid because that's how he needed to be. But then I've gotten to see the love in the last 20 years. And my mom was a home giver, a homemaker, but she worked as well. But she was just the most loving person that I know. So that's I'm going to give that as one. I could fake it and give it two, but I'll try to keep it one. I'll say my brother's number two, just because I like I said, I'm one of the youngest, and I've gotten to see my older brothers fail and succeed and do it with class and dignity. And my brothers are the coolest dudes I know. So. Mm. I'll give them one.
Glad you got a great relationship with them.
Yeah. I still want to kick their asses, but
that's
being a brother, right?
That's part of the family.
Man, after that, do I need any more? Christian, Catholic, I gotta say God.
Yeah,
you know?
Love it.
I'm not always perfect by far. But when I'm in trouble and when I need some guidance, I kind of get spiritual and I think of that.
I love it.
And again, I'm not trying to be cheesy. I'm really not, because I'm kind of a do-it-yourself guy. But I'll say my kids last, man. My two daughters have shown me how to be, number one, a good dad, because you have to be.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I screw up and do things wrong, you know, they keep me in check, as kids will do. Yeah, she's over there. I had to give her some love. She came with me today.
Hey, cool points.
Yeah, but it's true. Her and I are good. We're best friends. I'll say that. That's awesome.
I love it.
Yeah, man, it's family for me. I'm not always the best family guy, but when it comes down to it, I think it's the most important thing. Mm. So
it's awesome.
Yeah.
Matt, man, appreciate it, man. I think you're off the hot seat, dude.
You are off the hot
guys,
seat.
Guys, I hope I wasn't too boring. I hope it was just
no, you're awesome, were good. Dude.
You're awesome.
Again,
you
man.
You have great personality. Thank you have you, an brother. Infectious smile.
Thank you.
You're a big, gentle giant.
I mean, you're gentle giant.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah. I mean, even you're not in as your seat right here, people, I don't even think people are going to get an understanding of how big you are.
Wait till you stand up. You tower.
That's why I wore this shirt. Blend in, say
to yeah, I love the guy to talk to, Mr. Thomas, right there.
I loved
yeah.
all my white substitutes. And,
yeah.
yeah. So we're good. All right, we're good.
Appreciate you guys.
No, man, thanks, Matt, man. Hey, look, thank you for all our followers and listeners as always, man. And all, like we always say, man, give us a rating, a review, 5-star review. Tell a friend to tell a friend to what?
Tell a friend.
There it is. And, you know, anywhere you get podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts or iHeartRadio Podcast, please tell a friend and check us out.
Appreciate subscribe. It, I'm Peanut.
I'm Roman.
That's Rome.
That's Matt.
That's Matt. NFL Player Psych Nights Podcast. We in LA, and that's it. We out.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.